the things that you do when you're working in theatre is that you create communities all the time. And you create communities very quickly because you share things, you find things that are shared. And I think that's something that my upbringing sort of taught me in terms of, we'll talk about this more, but resilience.
Yeah.
About needing to do that really, really quickly. So moved around a lot. And my dad was like a bit of a scientist, and was like an engineer. And he had always wanted to be an actor. But he'd done really well at school and was like the first person out of his family to go to uni when uni was still free for everyone to go in the 50s.
Oh, wow.
So he was part of that generation which like changed everything. But he'd always wanted to be an actor. So I grew up with my dad showing me all these photos of him acting. So another character name and then another line of dialogue. I didn't even know it was called a line of dialogue. It was just what they said. And I remember looking at this, I literally remember feeling, going, wow, that's really weird. This is what people are saying to each other that I'm watching. Ooh. And that just like, I found that really, I was like about seven. Really? And I just found that really interesting. So anyway, that's the whole like, yeah.
To see it on the page.
Yeah, to see it on the page. Yeah. And then to see them saying the exact words.
Yeah, yeah.
Really weird.
Yeah, yeah. Knowing it come from someone else's mind.
Totally.
And now they're saying what was in their head.
Yeah.
It's quite magical. Yeah.
It is magical.
So how did you get into it from there? I mean, obviously you caught a bug, you know, a little bit of experience there, but how did you actually end up working in it?
So then I was really jealous because like my sister was like much cuter than me and she did ballet and things like that. And she got a job as a child to be at the Fairfield Halls in Croydon in a show. Oh my God, and she didn't even want to be an actor, but she'd got to. So that made me quite angry and that gave me a little bit of... and then I was going to go to college and I was going to do English because I didn't know any other courses. And then a friend of mine's older sister in Croydon had found this degree called a drama degree at Manchester University. And she said, I think you'd really like this. So I went and I had a meeting and I got in to do that course. So I did drama at Manchester in the 80s, late 80s. And it was an amazing time to be in Manchester in the late 80s because it was, you know, Thatcher was still in. That's not the amazing thing. But Manchester was really sort of political and really pushing against that. And there was a lot of things starting with like the music scene there and all of that sort of thing. And it felt really spirited to be there. So it felt like, and the big questions that we asked on our drama course were, what is theatre for? Why do we make theatre? Who has access to theatre? All of those things. So doing that degree there really made me think about, why do we make theatre? What's the community of theatre? What does telling stories mean to people? Who has the right to tell stories? So that really informed my sort of values around the theatre that I cared about. But I went there thinking that I was still going to be an actor and that I might try and get into drama school. And then when I was there, I was in a few plays. And do you know the actor called Toby Jones?
Yes.
Who's amazing. He's an amazing actor. He was in my year. And I got cast in a play with Toby Jones, and so like we're on stage and this little tiny studio where we used to put things on, and so we're on stage together, and I'm just sort of like saying my lines because I've learnt them, and then I looked across and I looked at Toby and I went, oh no, you're actually really good, really good at acting, Toby, and I'm literally here just sort of like saying my lines, so I realised that actually I wasn't in the same space as he was. Being an actor, but what I was doing was thinking about everything that was going on all the time. So I wasn't like centered. That word didn't even really exist then as a thing, but I wasn't present. I was all over the place thinking about everything else, whereas Toby was really present as an actor, and I thought, I can't be that, my head doesn't work like that. So that's when I thought, I'm not sure that I was going to be any good. I wasn't very good as an actor. So that's when I thought, well, what else is there for me to do? I didn't know. So that was a big moment, realising that the thing I thought I wanted to do...
wasn't actually...
that I'd wanted to do really since I was five was that I knew I wasn't going to be good enough. That's quite a scary thing.
Yeah, quite a eureka moment as well.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I was lucky to have it.
Yeah.
But it does open up a big vacuum.
A bit terrified, yeah, because like you were so set on that's exactly what I want to do.
Yeah.
And then you suddenly realised, actually, so then you're questioning, well, what do I want to do?
Yeah.
That's pretty daunting, isn't it?
It is daunting. And the thing that I think I'd got really good advice on was that I'd wanted to go to drama school, like when I was 18. And everyone thought, oh, do you really want to do that? Maybe, you know, think about going to a uni or going to college. So I'm really lucky, I'm really glad that I didn't just try and do that one thing when I was 18.
Mm.
But I actually had the privilege and the luck to get into Manchester and give myself a bit more space to work out what the right thing was, rather than going, this is all I know, so that's what I'm going to do.
And was directing an easy choice for you after that?
No, because, I mean, I don't know, you know, what anyone else's experiences was like this, but when I got to uni, there were all these people who already said that they were directors and knew what they wanted to do, and they'd all been in things like, they were all from North London, they were all really cool, and I was from Croydon. And they said things like, you know, they'd been in National Youth Theatre, or they'd already directed plays at school, so there was this sort of breed of people that said they were directors.
Oh. Intimidating.
Yeah. They deliberately intimidate in a way, not like, you know, they were just like, they sort of knew a lot. So I was like, well, I'm definitely not that person. And then a friend of mine who's from Newcastle wrote a play, and his family were miners, and it was just after the miner strike in the 80s that we were at uni, so that's how old I am. And he wrote a play called 40 Years Fall, which was about his family, and it was about the welfare state being created by Bevan in after the war.
Nye Bevan,
and then 40 years on, that his family was still struggling with the effect of the miners' strike and what that meant. So he wrote this play, it was a really good play, and he was directing it, and then someone else was in it, but doing a terrible, terrible Geordie accent. And Paul, my friend, was like, he's playing my grandfather. I cannot have my grandfather played like this with a terrible Geordie accent. So Paul said to me, I need to be in the play because I need to be able to represent my family properly.
Mm.
Will you direct it? So I was like sort of hanging around, painting the scenery or something. And I said, yeah, I will, but as a favour to Paul, because he was sort of upset. And I literally like got the script and I went, oh my God, it was like a little click went on. And I went, oh, that's the thing I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, that was it?
Yeah, because I'm sort of overseeing it all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, having the conversation with everybody.
And how did you feel at that moment? Because I know that sometimes, you know, we're always like, oh, I'm not ready yet.
Yes.
I'm not ready. And I felt again, you know, if an opportunity arises, you should just go for it and then try and work it out as you go.
Yeah.
Did you feel that? Or did you just think, no, I can do this? Or was it a bit
God,
like...
Oh, my God, that's such an amazing question.
It's a big job.
I think I didn't think I could do it, but I thought, why not? Just go for it.
Yeah.
So I didn't do it like with confidence. Yeah. I thought, I'm going to be great at this. I did it as in, oh well, why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
I think that's quite a way of sort of living my life. It's not like I definitely know how to do it,
but
rather than go, why wouldn't you try?
Yeah, and I think that's really important.
Yeah,
that's something I think a lot about, because that used to hold me back, you know.
Did it?
I was always a bit of a perfectionist and then thinking, I can't do it because I'm not good enough yet.
Yeah.
But then, when are you ever going to be ready?
Yeah.
And you need that experience, so it's good that you just went, well, I'm going to do it, and then it all clicked.
Do you know what, Barry? It's really interesting that thing about you say about being a perfectionist, because I'm not a perfectionist.
Mm.
I really care about things being their best and us finding ways together for things to be their best, but I have been blessed with not having that myself. So
yeah.
I'm always a bit like, it's better to do it than not to do it.
Well, I agree.
And it's never going to be good. Never
going
to be all right.
Don't be too precious.
Yeah,
Just be like, if it doesn't work, then at least I gave it a go, and then I'll learn from that for the next time.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I always think, like, you were going to ask me something about having been an artistic director as well. I always think the word endeavour is a really important word. Like, you know, I don't even know how you really would describe it. What do I mean when I say endeavour? That the reason you know why you're trying something, the endeavour is clear. So if you know why you're trying to do something, even if it doesn't work, you can always reflect on why it was you were trying to do it. So I think that's a really important thing about going in to do something.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah,
endeavour's an important word. If you can, well, yeah. And so then I directed that play, and I thought that was... And then I was like, well, then what happens? And then, so that was like, I was like 21. And then there was just like a really long, long time of... Well, I was just saying to you before, when I finished uni, I wrote like 300, maybe 400 letters. I've still got loads of the, like, I think I might have even handwritten them.
I was going to say, not even emails.
No emails, wrote them. There was this book that you could buy called Contact, and it had all the people, like artistic directors and everything. So I bought this book, went through, wrote all these letters to everybody, and I got one reply. And I wrote like to theatre people, I wrote to television people, this sort of thing. And I had one meeting. Shall I tell you weirdly who the meeting was with? Do any of you remember a programme called The South Bank Show, Melvin Bragg?
Yeah, yeah.
So Melvin Bragg, who was like the person who's still alive, he's old, he's like 90 or something now, but it was always done like arts programming and this kind of thing. He's the only person, he was the only famous person I wrote to. He's the only person that met me. And I asked if I could like be a researcher because I was on the South Bank Show, and he said to me, "I don't think you want to be a researcher. I think you want to be creative. I think you want to be making something."
Wow.
But I left devastated because I'd had one meeting out of hundreds of letters, and that one person had told me that they didn't think that I could work with them. So it's weird.
Which is interesting because now that goes into the question that we were speaking about before.
Yeah,
getting into this industry obviously is incredibly difficult. It's not really signpost, there's not a specific way you go in. But a big thing, as you've just pointed out, is like rejection.
Yeah.
You know, about you could be turned down and a lot of times you don't even know why.
Yeah.
You know, you hear stories of actors or whoever,
yeah,
or script writers, novelists get turned down over and over again.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, 300 letters, you get one reply. How did you navigate that? How did you deal with that sort of negativity almost, of rejection and uncertainty, you know?
I mean, it still happens.
Yeah.
So, like, I would still feel that now with things.
Mm.
How do you deal with it? I think it's a lot, to say it, that it brings about a lot of self-doubt.
Mm.
I think it's easy. I think we try and find ways now to be like sort of toxically positive about how you deal with things. But I think it's also really important to talk about what the negative things of those are.
Agreed.
So, you know, there is a lot of self-doubt, questioning, insecurity, sort of emotional insecurity and also financial insecurity around that. So there's so many sort of things about it. I mean, I've done so many other jobs, you know, in pubs and everything and all this stuff, all the sort of way along. And I think it was, I think I was like, just before I was 30, before I actually got anything, which was a sort of a period of time where I was going to be like earning, being a director, and that was getting on a scheme to go to Leeds. So loads of different things up to that point. I think when I was starting out, oddly, it was easier to deal with the rejection because there are no pathways.
Mm.
So you don't know what the right thing is that you should be doing.
Mm.
So you're just throwing things out all the time, sort of like trying and trying and trying. Actually, as you get a bit further on and then you get meetings with people or you do those things, when it becomes more personal, that's when it actually gets harder.
Right, okay.
You know, when you've actually gone to an interview.
Yeah,
before you're getting the interviews, you're just like, oh, I'm never going to get anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
But once you've actually got an interview and then you go in the room and you're having the conversation and then they don't choose you, that's the real sort of like self-doubt. And I think you either let that eat you up and hold you back, or you try to place it somewhere, I mean, almost physically, where you sort of go, I'm just sort of going to try and keep that there and keep going.
Because it is good to be self-aware about that, isn't it?
Yeah, you definitely.
You go out into that big, wide world, and it's not just going to happen overnight and be handed to you. It's going to be... So you've got... Almost like you're prepared for those moments.
Yeah. And I'm quite a wheeler-dealer, so actually, you know, like... So, like, when things sort of began to happen a bit, I... I became a script reader for a while, working for a television company, and then I worked in television for a while because I was quite lively and I was a quick script reader. So I'm always somebody, I never sort of went, oh, I only want to do this thing. I was like, I'll look at all the things that are there and I'll sort of not say no to anything unless it felt for the really wrong reasons. So I sort of said yes to loads of different things in different ways, even though they weren't necessarily right. So I ended up having some amazing, weird sort of opportunities. Like there was a television programme called Boone with Michael Elphickin a while ago. Gary, I'm glad you're nodding, Gary, you know it, yeah. And I ended up being a script editor on that, so like developing the stories for that. I would never have imagined that's a thing that I would have done. So I've done loads and loads of sort of different things, but the big shift was finding out about a scheme called the Regional Theatre Young Director Scheme, and I applied for it for 3 years in a row. And the first year they said, you don't have enough experience. And I'm like, how do I don't know how to get the experience. I know I haven't got enough experience. No one's given me a job yet.
Yeah.
And then I managed to persuade, okay, so what I did was I persuaded, so when I was a script reader working for the Central Television with Boone, there was this guy there who'd been to Cambridge. And I was like, right, you've been to Cambridge. So you've got all those contacts, everything from Cambridge. So I persuaded him to do an adaptation of a short story, and I persuaded him to go to his college to get money for us to take that show to the Edinburgh Festival.
Wow.
So that's the wheeler dealer bit. Yeah. Anyway, so he wrote this thing. So and that was the first sort of directing thing that I did after I'd left uni. So a lot of like just hustling.
Yeah, see, that ties in with what we said, is not a conventional way you get into the industry,
no.
So you've got to be open and willing to try different things, and that could knock on to something.
That's absolutely right.
Like you say, a bit of wheeling and dealing, a bit of blagging maybe.
Yeah, a little blagging, a bit of lying, you're just going to go out. You know, I would like say, oh, I'm doing this, or somebody's really interested in this, and you know, play people off against each other a little bit to get what you want. But I think the big thing that all comes back to is the thing about community again, is about trying to make as many, when I say connections, I don't mean like fancy connections, just like people that are like you, that want to do the same thing, and trying to make the most of all of those things. And not just thinking, somebody in power has got to give me a job for me to be able to get on. It would be like going, okay, so I've met Barry, we get on really well, what could we do?
Yeah.
What could we do together that would be a thing? So I did a lot of that with my peers. And kept trying to build those groups of people.
Yeah, build like a sort of almost like a black book of people that you've met, and
who all need the same thing.
Exactly. So you can always help each other out. Someone might say, "Look, I'm doing this. I need someone to."
That's exactly
help me out? And then they might think later on, someone mentioned, "Oh, we need this," and they're
That's a really good point. And the other thing is, I mean, it's much, much, much harder now. But people also connect better now. You know, through like online and social media, so you can find people more easily. But then you also know what everyone else is doing, which is much more intimidating. Whereas when I was doing, I didn't know what anyone else was doing, so you just sort of do your own thing, which is actually a bit more satisfying, a bit more calming.
Yeah.
To sort of work.
Because then there's
like
no comparison, is there?
No, there's no comparison. And I think the other thing is, of course, which is so different now, is that you could sign on, and that you could work, and that you could also, when I was starting out, and that you could also get like some of like the rent paid to do with that, and then you could still be being a director. And that was a massive, massive thing for my generation. That was sort of the last generation that could happen. So you could work in it, you know, you could sort of like do a lot of things and still get a bit of support, and like that helped you sort of like kick off in this,
which is massive, because
the
way things are now, you know, with rent, etc., you have to have a full-time job just to survive, let
100%.
Alone try and go out and chase your dreams.
Yeah. So it's much, much harder for people now. Definitely.
So, with you mentioned earlier on, you're the artistic director of the Royal Court, which is amazing, by the way, the first female as well, which is an incredible achievement. I think it's impressive. And you were saying earlier, you've been there for 11 years.
Yeah.
What is the difference between an artistic director and a director?
Yeah, so when I went to Leeds with this Regional Theatre Young Director Scheme, which was 2 years where I was like, being paid to be trained, The artistic director who was there at the time was a woman called Jude Kelly, who then ran the South Bank and ran Women of the World. She was amazing, is amazing. And what I really felt when I was there was that actually I really cared about the context that we were making the work in. I definitely wasn't just like an artist that just wanted to make my own work in a certain way. I really cared about who it was for. This is all part of like what I found out at Manchester as well. Who it was for, who was telling the stories, who were the audience. So the context really meant, was really important to me. And that's when I realised actually that what I wanted to be was an artistic director. And so in answer to your question, an artistic director is somebody who oversees the whole company, as well as directing shows, but you don't always have to direct shows. But really you're looking after the mission or the idea, you're thinking about what plays you're going to put on to build an audience, who are the artists, the writers, the actors you want to work with, what's the education work that you want to do, and how do you sort of keep the business going. So you're sort of overseeing the whole thing, because I'm really bossy. So that was the thing that I really sort of like enjoyed. So, and it would be like you'd sort of go, these are like the education groups that we want to run, and we want to help people to see whether they're writers or directors or whether they're just at school or they're just interested in theatre. So all of those things became really important to me. So the first job I had was with Payne's Plough as an artistic director, and that's a touring company. And then I was in my house in Stoke Newington, and I got a phone call from somebody who was on the board of a newly set up National Theatre of Scotland, and they hadn't started yet, they were just the trustees on the board. And she said to me, will you think about applying to be like artistic director of National Theatre of Scotland? And I was like, no, because I've like got two small kids and I really love the Payne's Plough and I love all that. And she said to me, well, what are you going to do next then if you don't go for a job like this? And I was like, I was really happy where I was, and like around the corner from my mum and dad who had helped me look after the kids and all that stuff, really like settled. And then just that thing of somebody going, well, what are you, you could sort of go, you get a little itch. Yeah. Anyway, so I went up. So I had this amazing job, which was setting up from scratch National Theatre of Scotland. So I was there for a while, and then I was really enjoying that, and then the job at the Royal Court came up. But the job that I've always cared about, which is what we did with our workshop, is about writers, about living writers. And so the Royal Court has always been about new writers. So I'd read so many of the plays that were there, I'd seen some plays that were there. So when that job came up, and we were really happy in Scotland, and like my kids were like, are like sort of 9 and 11, and we'd been there for like 8 years, and it was all, and I thought, oh my God, I really want to go for this job. So what's weird is, so then I said to the kids, I might go for this job, how would you feel about moving? And my son, who was 11, went, oh yeah, back home. And I was like, wow, you've been in Scotland for your whole childhood, but London was home. Arsenal, happy.
Yeah, he must be very happy.
So happy. We were all there last night.
Oh, really?
But anyway, so left there, came to the Royal Court, and the Royal Court is a really weird job, because when I was in Scotland starting the National Theatre of Scotland, there wasn't a precedent, no one had done it before. So it was kind of like anything you did was impressive. But then got to the Royal Court with a massive history of all everything. So it's really interesting taking over something. Quite male dominated.
Yeah.
And not that that is a thing, but quite a sort of hierarchy of this is the way that we do it. And then starting a job going, I want to change it. I want it to be slightly different. And really interesting, the sort of pushback on that, which I didn't think I would get.
Yeah, see, that's quite interesting, because again, it must have been intimidating, as you mentioned, going in there quite well driven, you want to change, but at the same time, brave as well, because as you said, you had your values, you had your ideas of why is theatre, why do we do it, who do we do it, new rights, etc.
Yeah.
You've gone in with that vision.
Yeah.
So that must have helped you believe in what you were doing.
I think so, and it was really interesting. The way you put that is so brilliant, because after I'd been there for about like 9 months, I was like, I don't know why I'm here. Why did I leave my job in Scotland? Because in Scotland, it was really clear why I was there. I was finding ways to tell stories that needed to be told, that hadn't been told before in that way in Scotland, working with all these communities all across Scotland who hadn't had access to theatre like that. And there I was in Sloane Square, in like one of the poshest places in the world, in the corner, in this theatre, like going, why am I, what is this about? And then it clicked. Oh, it was for the writers. It was irrelevant where it was. Yeah. It just happened to be there.
Yeah.
And it was about the writers. So they were the community that I was sort of working to serve. And I met Chris Sonnex.
That's
where we met. Yeah.
And then this happened.
And then he was so amazing. And then I asked him to be an associate there. And then he went off to the bunker and then came here.
Amazing.
So there we go. So yeah, I wouldn't have met Chris Sonnex.
See, again, it's that thing, isn't it? Taking these opportunities.
Yeah.
Even with a bit of self-doubt, thinking, oh, I'm not sure why I'm here. This is difficult, having a bit.
Yeah.
But then look at all the things that come out of it when you just go
through
it.
That's right. And you know, that thing about, it's always, always about people. It's always about who do you have the conversations with, who do you spend time with, who, you know, two brains, all of that thing, what can you be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what would you say was your favourite part of being a director?
Being a director?
Bossing everyone around, is it?
yeah, bossing everyone around. My favourite part of being a director is when we did our, like, the Theatre Makers thing, those of you who did that with together will know that this is true. It's the fact that I don't know what's going to happen until all the people who are in the room on that day make it happen. And I absolutely love that. You can have a little bit of a map or a little bit of an idea where you want to go, but actually it's to do with how everyone's listening, what everyone's contributing, what everybody brings from their day outside to make the atmosphere different, all those things that make us be alive, even if they're difficult or whatever. That's my favourite bit about it. It doesn't exist apart from in this moment and we're all doing it together.
Yeah.
I love that.
I think that's my favourite part about art in general.
Yeah.
Is that making of something. You know, you have a blank canvas and you put paint on it and suddenly you've got
it's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. Or, you know, a script that you interpreted with people.
And, yeah.
You know, I think you're right with that. With all the letters that got written at the end.
Oh, my God, they were so amazing.
Even you said, I didn't really even think of that aspect of it. And then it brings a whole new life to it.
Totally.
This is someone asked about this question, actually. Was what do you think distinguishes great directing from just sort of your average?
Oh, my God.
Which is a bit of a tough question, I know, but
I don't know. It's great is a hard word, isn't it?
Mm.
Great. It's like making something very... I think that caring about how you tell the story. The story is like whatever it is the thing. So I think good directing is putting the story first, not putting your personality and ego first.
Yeah.
You might not win as many awards. Or you know, because sometimes you see those shows where the director has really put their ego or their thing in front of the play, and that can be quite shiny, and people love that. But I think great directing is when you go serving whatever the story is, and because the story is always bigger than all of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and everybody, regardless of whatever experience you've got, anything, everybody can understand a story if a story is well told. Just in our human nature. To get a good story. So I think that is the job of a good director, is to tell the story well. And even if a writer's written something where they're deliberately not telling a story, you go, why are they not telling a story? Mm. Why is it language? It's about that. It's about serving the idea well.
So fully
getting your ego out the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Fully understand the story and then be true to that story.
Yeah, and
it's
exactly that. And interrogating it and not being scared to ask difficult questions. Like when we did the play, which we looked at, some of us together, the play called X, there are some really difficult things in that play that don't make sense or aren't clear and all those things, but we interrogated it together. We asked all the same questions. So it's not being scared of asking questions that you don't know the answers to. I think is a really important part of it.
Again, so get your ego out of the way.
Yeah,
just
get your ego out of
the way. Completely honest and say,
yeah, don't think, oh my God, I need to be able to answer this question. Yeah. Just go, yeah, good question. Who knows what the answer is?
Yeah, that's good.
That's a good thing for life, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Because you don't, you know, we're not neat, are we? It's not neat. You don't get an answer, but it's fine to be allowed to know what the question is.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree fully. So this is an interesting one as well. So looking back over your... you know, your career, etc. What do you wish that you'd understood sooner about the business side of it? Because again, I'm a bit more I just want the creative creativity side. Yeah, yeah. But obviously there's another whole area.
Yeah. I mean, I think, genuinely, I think things like, so I got in a lot of trouble when I was a bit younger because I didn't understand about tax.
Mm.
Even saying it has just literally made me feel sick. But I ignored it because I was moving around a lot and, you know, all those sort of things. And I think, God, why was I supposed to know about that?
Mm.
So that was that's a really genuine thing that I really didn't know about what that was.
Yeah, because if you're not taught, how do you...
No, and I got in a lot of trouble. And then I was at the Edinburgh Festival one year where I met Danny, who's my husband, who I'd known before. But that's when we got together, and he was a stand-up comedian at the time. And he had a really good accountant, and he was like, why have you run away from tax for 9 years? They were knocking at the door, you know, I was like, hiding down the safe. No, but you know that thing? And I was like, but that's a thing that we're not taught.
Yeah, exactly.
As freelancers as well and all of that. So that's a really big thing I wished. And when I talk to drama students, and when I go and talk to colleges and things like that, I say that they have a duty to, if young people are paid, or anybody, not young, that anybody is paying for that kind of education, you have a duty to teach them about what that
means.
I really feel strongly about that.
Yeah.
So that's a business thing I wished I'd known about. I'm also, even though it probably doesn't help, I'm not actually very good at networking. So I do, I'm not shy, but I sort of find it a bit weird going into a room and sort of introducing yourself to everyone, all that sort of thing. So I think... To sort of be better at that, get over that a bit, even though I say I really love having equal relationships. I find it really hard to go in and ask somebody what they could do for me. Or
see, I think that ties in with what you said about sending the letters out and taking opportunities. I think it's a case of putting yourself
definitely
out, because we all get nervous and anxious with people we've never met before, certain situations. But sometimes you do have to just walk in
totally
and go hello. You know, and I think that's a really difficult part.
Yeah, it's so hard.
But it's a running theme, isn't it? You've got to put yourself out, really. And if it doesn't connect with that person, well, then that wasn't right for you or them at that moment.
Yeah.
You know, you might be, or they may say, look, you know, I can't help you, but I know so-and-so, have a word with them.
Yeah.
And I think that's really a good eye-opener for me to hear that you've just got to put yourself out.
Definitely you have. And the thing that I then worked out was actually, the best way to do that was to, give yourself a little script. So you're not relying on being your best self in a moment.
Mm.
You're actually going, I'm going to come in and say this thing that I've sort of slightly practiced to myself.
Yeah.
So I don't have an emotional attachment to it.
Yeah.
I'm just doing a thing as a start, and that I felt that was really...
No, that helps. That
really helpful.
That was a good thing, was it?
Yeah, really helpful.
Because I suppose if you know what you're going to say, then you're not going to be like, oh, hello, I'm Barry.
Yeah.
Oh, but if you've already got a sort of back up in your mind, absolutely, you can just do the blurb, so to speak.
Definitely. And also, I think a big thing that I really learnt about that whole side of it as well is about listening.
Mm.
So if you're going to go into those situations which are quite difficult, and it is hard to listen, isn't it? Mm. We have a big chat in our head all the time.
Mm.
You're really good listening.
Well,
but it's really hard to do that. So I just realised actually that a lot of that is also about having a script of a few questions that you ask somebody.
Yeah.
And then you're just listening, and then responding, and then, which feels a little bit counterintuitive, because you think if you're going to go into a room because you want something that you're going to be asking for something, whereas actually it's much better to have a few questions so you're listening, so that person is feeling that you want to know about them, so that's a really good thing. The other thing that I found really, really useful always, and I still do now, is asking people for their advice, rather than asking people for something. Because it really flatters people if you ask for their advice, rather than go... I'm looking at Leonie there, who has to raise all the money for cardboard sits. But it's a really interesting... If somebody has lots of money, and you think you want to get them to write some money to support the work that we do here, it's much easier to go to a rich person, could you give me some advice on how you think we could raise some money for cardboard sets, than to go, will you sign a cheque?
Can I have your money, please?
Yeah. So I think advice is really good, because it really flatters people. So if you see a director or a writer or somebody, rather than saying, will you put my play on, or can I direct a play for you, can you give me some advice about how I could do this?
Then you're kind of not asking for something except advice, and advice is free.
Advice is free, and people love to give it.
Yeah. People love giving advice.
They love it. Anyway, those things are really good icebreakers, little tactics like that.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's brilliant. So I suppose everyone's interested in, you know, what plays have you directed that you especially liked or loved, or got, felt you got out of it, you wanted, you know, where it really come together?
I think that some of the most satisfying plays that I've done are when I've gone on quite a long journey with a playwright, with a writer, and actually that the job that I've done is about supporting or facilitating or enabling them to really reach their ambition or their potential. Ooh. So on a quite a long journey, you know, the play that we looked at, X, is an example of that. It took Ali quite a long time to write that play, and I kept encouraging him to keep being brave and that sort of thing. So I think those processes are really important. And then also the sort of flattering thing when somebody comes to you with a play and says, you know, I've written this play, I really think you'll understand it, so will you do it? And then you sort of go, wow, that I've got a real responsibility there to understand this person's like baby that they've like struggled over and how to do that. So things that have that sort of process to it, I've always really loved. Mm. I just did a play after I left the Royal Court called Crap's Last Tape, which is a Samuel Beckett play, which is a one-man show. It's written in like 1960. And it's about a man. There's a version of it on at the moment at the Royal Court with Gary Oldman in. It's about a man, and he's like, on every year on his birthday, he's recorded himself on a reel to reel saying what are the highlights or the lowlights of his year. And this is the year that he feels he's getting older, and he listens to the tapes again, and he records his last tape. But it's really intense and it's really beautiful. And Samuel Beckett is an amazing writer because he just sort of writes about the sort of human condition in a really sort of like incredible way. And that, I learned so much doing that play. And every single time I worked on it with the actor Stephen Rann, I watched it, I learned something completely new. So that was really satisfying. Yeah, that's good. Those things you do when you learn something new every time. Mm.
Yeah. And I suppose you're always evolving as well, aren't you? Because each play is going to be different. Each cast is going to be different.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to, I suppose, adapt how you approach certain people every time. So there's always,
absolutely, always
learning and adaptation.
Yeah. And also the other thing is that people like, you know, even when you've like done a play and it's going really well, and say it's in a run of a play, you know, people have loads going on every day, and then they come in to do the show in the evening. Do their warm up at like 6 o'clock or whatever to do the show. And they're not, you know, we are not robots. So everybody comes in with having had a different experience.
Yeah.
So you're always also sort of like managing all the sort of ebbs and flows of life with people as well.
Yeah, good days, bad days.
What are people bringing? How do people need to look out for each other? And those things are really important as well.
Yeah.
Which I really, you know, like, sits are really good at this, but how do you hold that?
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
The other question I wanted to ask, going back to what you said about that play, he's sort of recording these reels, he's getting a bit older, was, you know, I'm not a spring chicken anymore, and, you know, I've decided to try and venture into the creative industries later on in life.
Yeah.
If you were to do it, you know, if you hadn't started as early as you did and you were starting late, or if in my shoes, what advice could you give? What, you know, would you do, or would you say?
I think I would really think about what excites me, first of all, and what interests me. Because I speak to some people and they say, oh, I just want to be an actor, which is obviously fine. But then if you speak to them further, you go, oh, I want to know what kind of things you really like. And I think that's really useful to sort of go, these are the like shows I like, or these are the plays that I like, or these are the films that I like, that I feel like I really relate to. And I really connect to in some way. So I think it's useful to do that, because then if you're going to go through and like email 300 people, but the reason I didn't get any response is because I wasn't specific to those people. Whereas if you go, oh, you really like this film that this company made, and you really like the style of what the film is, and then you would like make him a screen. I'm contacting you because I really like this. Yeah. I think those things are really important.
Yeah.
So when I started out, I didn't do that. I was just much more like, I just want to be a director.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now, yeah. I think, and when I used to like answer people's letters at the Royal Court and meet them and that sort of thing, it was because people were writing to me going, I saw this play, or I've heard about this thing, or I've looked at that, so they're specific, rather than me general. So I think that's a really important thing.
Yeah, rather than just a vague.
Like, rather than just be vague. This, yeah, because, what, yeah. It's that. It's like going, these are things that interest me, this is why, and this is what I'm going to follow.
Yeah.
So I think being specific about that, and not being too general about sort of going, I'm going to like target a few things, and really sort of work at that would be a good thing to start. But like you said, Barry, there are very few pathways. Like if you wanted to be like a doctor or a whatever or whatever, you know, there are certain, I don't know, I never wanted to be a doctor. No. I don't know, I'm presuming there are pathways, I don't know. But I think that there are loads of schemes, there are loads of things, opportunities for different sort of like, you know, like director schemes or writer schemes or stage manager schemes, or you know. So I think it's doing a lot of research around that. We're a lot more than they used to be.
Right, okay, that's good.
Also, the other thing, which we might talk about afterwards, but it's like, you know, a lot of theatre has public funding. So where people have public funding, it is their responsibility to be open and to create opportunities for people. Otherwise, they shouldn't have that public funding. Mm. And that's part of what the Arts Council does. So it's and those companies have to be looking for people. And a sort of like continuous level. So I think it's a really useful thing to remember that they are obliged. You're nodding to me. It's true though, but they're obliged to have pathways and be open. So to find out what they are.
And
there are loads of them in different ways. And they're hard to get onto, but they are there.
Yeah, that's good to know.
And we can talk about what some of those are and things as we sort of go on, but yeah.
Because, as you mentioned, you know, earlier on when you said about the experience thing, people are like, oh, you haven't got experience. And they're like, well, how can I get experience if I can't, you know, it's like the chicken and the egg, and it's just this loop, isn't it? But then, as you say, if there is public funding that's specifically for those areas, then it's a great way for you to get in.
Yeah.
So that wasn't something I thought about before. So
no, that's right. And the other thing I think is, one of the things that, you know, I mean, you will all know, you will all feel this, acutely, but one of the things as well is that's happened is that in a good way nobody is allowed to employ anybody for free anymore, not employ but work for free, be observer or anything. But what that does mean, there are loads fewer opportunities for people to get access. So for example, you know, like but things were different, but like when I first started, like you could be an unpaid assistant director. So the first thing I ever got on my CV wasn't paid, but I had to be an assistant director. Well, now you can't do that anymore.
Right.
So what that means is, which is really sad, is that there often won't be an assistant director on a show because the show can't afford to have an assistant director. Mm. But so I think there's something that theatre is trying to, or organisation trying to them, is to find different ways of being able to support people to be able to get access to observe work or to be part of it in some way. So I think it's always worth asking people if you can come in and observe for a couple of days.
Well, even on a professional level.
Yeah. So yeah, because if I was directing a show, you couldn't come in and be an assistant. You couldn't have the title of assistant director for free, because that would be like, that's not legal anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you said to me, I would love to come in and observe you doing it for a couple of days, I would be really happy with that. But that's something that people don't really know about. Mm. Or like if you're a writer and you get a new player's been, I'd love to come in and observe for a couple of days. That's a really good thing to try to do, just so you get the feel of it and you have the conversation with those kind of things.
Yeah, that's brilliant. But again, I've never even thought of that as well.
Yeah, it's a really useful thing there. And I think, and like if you, depending on what sort of thing you feel you lean towards, you know, like I know, like, remember Alan Rickman, amazing actor, Rickman. So he was on the board of the Royal Court. So I got to know him a little bit. He was so generous to other actors. There are so many people who wrote to him that after he died said, oh no, he gave me some money to go to drama school, or he let me go on the set of Harry Potter to watch him. So he took me for a couple of days. So people really, really, when they are successful, want to give back. Don't underestimate that. Because hardly anybody is really a Nepo baby.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Most people have, like, tried, you know, have, like, tried to do anything. So sometimes those really people who've seemed very successful, if you can find a way to... are really, really generous with their time.
Mm.
And are really generous with giving people opportunities or meeting people. So, yeah, definitely, that is a really, I think, underused...
resource, yeah. Resource. I suppose you think, well, number one, how do I get in contact with them? And number two, they'll probably laugh it off.
Yeah.
But what would be an approach? So let's just say, for example...
Yeah.
Gary Oldman's doing a play.
Okay, very good, perfect. So, yes, that's a really good example. Okay. So, you could drop in a letter at the Royal Court while the play is on. It's a stage door written to Gary Oldman. He will get, every time he goes in, he will get those letters.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I don't know how many letters he gets and whether he opens them all, but that will go to him.
Okay.
You could also send a letter to someone's agent. You can easily find out online who someone's agent is. Like, there are directors, like, there's a well-known, just like same age as me, Katie Mitchell, who's a really interesting, she's a real art director, not, like, artistic director. But people write to her all the time, and when she comes and does a play, like, when she did a play at the Royal Court, she would say, oh, I've got four people observing. Because people had written to her, and she was like, of course you can come and watch my process and my practice. Mm-hmm. So people, so, yeah, so they, you know, you can find people through their agents, you can DM people if you're on Instagram. A lot of people are on Instagram. I'm all right to the theatre that the. So when I was like at the Royal Court, if a play was coming up and somebody had seen that somebody had been announced to do something, they would often send a letter in advance of them getting there, and it would be sitting there for them. So yeah, people do. Yeah.
So it's again being proactive, going out there, just trying it. Because what's the worst that can happen? They don't reply, or they say no.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. And also, it's like anything that you do that makes those connections. So, like, if you were going to say, Gary Oldman is a really good example, right? So, if you now wanted to write to Gary Oldman,
mm-hmm.
the thing to say would be that we were in a conversation at Cardboard Citizens.
Yeah.
This came up. I wanted to speak to you. You asked me about that, and I said, just write to him at the Royal Court, mm-hmm. see what happens. It's always about trying to make as many. Mm. Or I saw you in this show. You really moved me. I've been thinking about nothing ever since. I would love to come and watch you work or something. It's the thing about being specific.
Yeah, get to the point.
And like people get flattered, and they, like I said, they want to pass it on.
Mm. Yeah, especially if they've been there themselves.
Totally.
Because they know what it's like. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's brilliant advice, because I would never...
No, it's not like common known, is it, that? In fact, I didn't even think saying that before I came today. It was just, because we're in this room now.
Yeah.
Just came up.
And we're probing you with our questions
today. It's good.
So,
Especially because you're all connected to Cardboard Citizens. Mm. You know, that already is a thing, you know, to be able to put in a letter.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm writing.
Because you're not just some random.
Yeah,
sort
no,
of
the
like
more you can place it.
Fan or
yeah.
a group.
Yeah, it's not a fan.
Yeah, can I meet you? It's like you say, it's specific.
It's really specific. I want to be an actor. Yeah. Or I love your work on whatever it is, and I really would love to talk to you about it. Specific.
Yeah, specific, professional.
Yeah, professional.
Not can I have your autograph or selfie. It's like, no, this is actually about the...
Yeah, about the work.
The work.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
And trying to find my way into that.
Yeah, literally, the pathways are so difficult.
Yeah, because like we mentioned, it's not, like you say, a doctor, you want to be a doctor, you go get your GCSEs, go to university, get the training, etc. Whereas this doesn't really work.
And then you go on strike.
So, I mean, it's all really great advice. Is there anything that you would like to share, or any other nuggets of wisdom that you could pass on? I'll put you on the spot with that one, haven't I?
God, there's so many things, but I'm just like...
Is there anything that I haven't asked you, maybe, perhaps?
You can also take a break now if you like, and then
you can
say...
Yeah,
did you see the pay? No, I've got so many things I could say.
Then you can share, maybe have a bit of time to think about if there's anything else you'd like to share, and everyone else have a think about if there's any questions you'd like to ask people. How the questions that you'd like to ask to Samira.
Mm-hmm.
hour, so we'll have a bit of a
long
Okay,
and then I'll answer that.
And then...
Yeah. Give you a bit of time.
So back at 3:30, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you.